All right, guys, working class on Deercast episode 42. I even looked before we got going, so I knew. Brian Weiss is joining me this week. What's up, brother?
Hey, not much. How about yourself?
Oh, man.
You've been busy.
We've been busy, but busy good, you know, not busy bad. There's definitely a difference. So,
yeah, you just got back from Africa, it looked like.
Yeah, it was. Every bow hunter has to go one time. That's my perception on it now.
So was that water buck, like, you know, you said SCI gold. What does that mean?
So I don't really even know, like, you know what I mean? We're so familiar with like Pope and Young, Boone and Crockett, like scoring systems, that a lot of those animals I'm asking are pH, which you have to have a pH sit with you because otherwise you don't know what you're hunting or what you're shooting, you know? And like, they all look big to me. You know, so a big water buck comes in. I'm like, I don't know. That looks big. Or, you know, the first one I did see, I was like, hey, is that a big one? He's like, no, that's not big at all. And I'm like, oh, well, it looks big to me, you know, because they're a bigger animal, you know, like, I don't know, 600-ish pounds, maybe 550, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that water buck that I ended up shooting, he's like, that's a really big one. But they're good at like not getting you super excited. It'd be like if you had a guide with you, or if you were guiding a new whitetail hunter and a 190 walked out. You'd have to be like, yeah, that's a big one. We should probably shoot this one. Because if you were like, it's a super giant, you got to shoot it. Don't mess it up.
You'd then, be shaking.
Yeah. So they're pretty good at doing that. My sable and my water buck were like, from what they tell me, it's like killing a 200-inch whitetail.
Oh. So,
My PH knew whitetails as well. He lives in Texas in the off – well, what he considers the off season. So he comes back to the States and lives in Texas in the summer when it's summer there. It's winter over there right now. So he's over there guiding hunts and stuff like that. So he knows whitetails. So he was putting
that sable is wild the way it kind of curved forward, you know?
Yeah. They're like a mystical wizard horse is what they look like when they walk around. They're crazy looking. We were joking around. They have like a purple aura when they walk around.
Really?
That's cool. They don't really, but they carry themselves like so proud and confident, and just it's hard to explain until you see one, man. You gotta go. You definitely have to go.
So what's the strategy? I mean, I've never, like, what do you do? Are you just sitting water holes? How does that work?
Yeah, so this time of year, it's like you basically look at the water like it's your food plot. Because there's not a lot of food there right now. All the leaves are up the trees and bushes and everything. And they have to drink water. You know, it's still, even though it's winter, it was getting like mid high 90s during the middle of the day. So once you hit like 10, 11, noon, 1 o'clock, they have to drink. So, yeah, you basically, depending on what you want to hunt, you kind of have an idea what's in the area, just how you'd pick a tree stand or a ground blind. You know, if you know there's a 160 over there and 130s over here, you're going to try and go where the big boys are living. And about when you think they got a drink, and they all had pretty good ideas. Like, oh yeah, like a kudu normally hits water about 10:30, you know, like that's their drinking time, like estimated. You never really know. Mm-hmm. So water was like the main strategy. And then I guess, you know, you're playing the odds a little bit too, just like in whitetail hunting. You know, if you want to hunt a 180, you're not going to see a 180 every sit. So you're going to see a lot of smaller ones and waiting out for that big one or a mature one, you know? So
do you sit all day, or how does that work?
We did. We'd sit from, we wouldn't get out there right at daylight. We'd get there, I don't know, 7:30. So, cause nothing really hits the water real, real early. Once the heat starts getting up, then they start hitting the water. And then we'd sit to about 2 o'clock. Get a quick lunch, or we'd skip lunch or bring a lunch and then sit all the way till dark. And it'd get dark about 6:30 there. So it's long sits, but it was fun. You gotta go.
How long was your flight?
Oh geez. Long. I think we had 45 hours in travel with layovers on the way back. On the way there, I wasn't really feeling that great. So I kind of had that where I'm like counting every minute of the flight, you know, like in the long flights, how they have that monitor in front of you, mm-hmm. and it tells you how much time you have left. I was like counting the minutes down. So on the way there was way worse. And I was like, this better be worth it.
And you're trying to sleep to where you're going so you don't have jet lag.
Oh, it's, yeah. The travel's not fun. And we were all like, this trip better be worth it, because if it's not worth it, this sucks. It's well worth it. You definitely have to go. I'm telling you, if you're passionate about bow hunting, you got to have that like Africa experience. You know, it's just, I think it's something every bow hunter needs to have.
What's the neatest animal you saw?
The sable are pretty cool. They're hard to beat, man. Sable, kudu are pretty cool. I'm just interested in all of them because they're so new. They're so different from what we're used to. So to me, right. It's just so interesting. And it's cool to like talk to the PHs. It's like, they know, I don't know how many plains game there is, like 30 something species. They have to know them all really well because they're professionals, you know. They know every animal like we know whitetails.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. It's so impressive.
Your guy from Texas is pretty impressive.
He was the coolest dude. Because you can sit there, you're in the blinds, and it's, you know, you sit in the back of the blinds, it's dark, and they're pretty quiet in there. They kind of keep in the sound. So you can whisper and talk. And I think about the end of the trip, he's just like, dude, will you shut up and quit asking me questions? He wasn't really, but I did ask him, I'm like, are you getting annoyed with me? Because every question, you know, animal come out, I'd be like, hey, tell me about these. Like, you know, explain. I want to know all the details. Just how we do whitetails, you know, we're infatuated with them. So that's how I was trying to be with all the African game. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, makes the time go by and, you know, learning something new. And is there anything you learned strategy wise that you can take back and maybe bow hunting whitetail, something that you learned or a tactic that,
you know, it's, there probably is, you know, if I combed it down and thought about it more and picked something out, but like the basic, I have a hard time sitting in ground blinds on the ground because like your visibility, and I just lose interest if I'm whitetail hunting. I find myself like not really being as hyper focused as I would be from an elevated sit. They taught me how to sit on a ground blind, even though you can't see 360 around you. You know, it's, that'd be the probably the most exchangeable hunting tactic that I learned. But you got to go. We're going again. You're coming with. How's that?
Yeah, let me know when you're going one of these days. And you did it with a young kid at home too. That's, I'm sure, tough too.
It is tough, but you know, we're gone 10 days and like there's Wi-Fi at camp, but we're wanting to go back and do a working class bow hunter camp so listeners can come with us, and we're going to put together like a really affordable package because it's not like expensive how people think. You know, it's not 30 grand like everybody thinks. Like Doug, one of the co-hosts, someone messaged him, was like, how much did you have on that trip? 30 or so, 25 or 30? And he's like, no, not even. Like
I would have guessed that.
No, not even close. Like you're sub $5,000 for 5
a.m. Wow.
Like you're spending more on your tips because you want to, the people over there are so awesome. You want to tip them in your flight. And we procrastinated on our flight. We could have saved, our flight was $1,600. When we first looked and we were kind of hem-hawing, seeing if we were going or not, weren't sure what going what week, they were like $750 for flight.
Oh, wow.
There and back. So we could have saved a lot more money, but for five animals, it's almost $1,000 an animal. Very affordable.
That's affordable. And then coming back, do you have a lot of expense and that sort of a thing, getting them back home? Or?
So it's up to you. You can either mount them there, and with the exchange rate, it's about half price. And then they crate them and ship them over. And that's the quickest way to get your animals back. Or you can, what's cool about who we went with, that taxidermist is friends with our taxidermist here, and our taxidermist here does African animals and can do the shipping and all that. So we don't really have like that middle man brokerage deal. And that's going to be the cool thing that if listeners go with us, so we could have just had everything cleaned and salted and all that, and then shipped to our taxidermist and then mounted in the States. But we're leaning, we'll get the animals back quicker. We're not putting the pressure on our taxidermist with, you know, 25 animals to get them done, and we want them back quick, you know, because it'd be 2 years before, it'd be a year before he even got them, and then, you know, another year and a half, 2 years for him to get through all those animals on top of the whitetails and turkeys and all that stuff that Old Barn does. So we'd opted to just get them mounted there, and then they crate them all custom sized to that, and then we all split the cost of the crate. So
that's so cool.
It's awesome, man. You got to go. But enough talk about me. We're not here to talk about me and my trips and stuff like that.
That's interesting.
You got to go. I'm just telling you, I will keep you in the loop. Next plan. I'm hoping 2024 we can get a big group to go. Because if you're gonna go, you want to go with people you can hang out with and have fun. You know.
Absolutely. That's the funnest part of camp.
Oh yeah, it is. It everything about the whole experience minus the travel was incredible. So
awesome.
Yeah, get people's wheels turning a little bit on it, but.
And we love hunting water holes here at home. It's been a big deal for us the last couple of years. So
has it really?
Oh, yeah.
What turned you on to hunting water holes for whitetails?
Drought.
Yeah, right.
Drought. Okay, you know, we've had a big drought the last couple of years, and so we've been putting water holes in our food plots. Actually,
last year.
Yep, I got my buck in Nebraska was right on a water hole November 7th, and it was like 80 degrees that day. And I felt confident because of the water hole, and there's no water between me and the food. And so his closest water is actually a food plot that didn't grow, but it had a water hole.
So how are you putting a water hole in it? Like, can you break down like
how so, you do like it? Tractor Supply has like 110 gallon tanks, and we just, this one was actually above ground. I didn't have time to dig it in the ground. And so we just set it above ground and filled it up. There's a cattle tank not too far away on my stepdad's place.
Mm-hmm.
So we filled up, you know, one of those tanks I could put in the back of the truck and just filled it up every couple of months.
No kidding. Yeah. So you're already ready to hunt Africa. It's like almost, I mean, they'd have like concrete pits for them and pumps to get the water there. But no kidding. Above just a raised cattle. Yeah,
it was nuts. And to think that it works, I mean, it worked. It was just like a food plot draw, only it was a water tank. Great for pictures. I mean,
yeah,
it was, we almost have water tanks at almost all of our spots now because we've
wow, that's interesting. That
a great addition.
See, I've hunted near water before, but never like on a pond specifically for that, for with whitetails. I've never, I see guys put in similar to what you're saying, that they'll kind of dig down and put like some, I don't know, like kind of like visqueen and cover it with dirt and then fill it with water. And I seen guys dig and bury tanks and stuff like that. I've personally never done it. I wonder if that's something I'm majorly overlooking.
Well, and we're farther west too. We don't get as much rain as you do either. And so it might help us more than, you know, maybe where you guys are farther east, get more rain.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, if it's on the edge of your food plot, it's not hurting anything anyway.
Right.
And so if they are thirsty, it might be that one extra thing, put it at 40 yards to the other side of your food plot, and it just might be the thing that gets them in range.
Yeah, it's overlooked. Because you guys are, where are you guys at? I mean, you don't got to say the town you're in, but you're in Nebraska.
It's all right. Yeah, Nebraska. Yep. So both Cody and I mainly hunt Nebraska. We do a lot of hunting in South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana as well.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides of the state, Nebraska as well. So we have some hunting out in the panhandle where we do some mule deer hunting. This year I have an antelope tag and a cow elk tag. So that's pretty awesome.
All for Nebraska?
Yeah. Nebraska actually has some, you know, world-class elk hunting, believe that.
It's so overlooked. I feel because we did the Nebraska big game show the last couple of years, you know. We actually saw you there. That's where we met.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you see some of the elk around and you hear people talking about it. I'm like, I feel like Nebraska is pretty slept on. A lot, it's overlooked a lot.
Well, it's for residents and landowners for the elk tags. And so non-residents, you can't have a tag.
That's fair for you guys.
That's why. Yeah, I mean, it's a lifetime tag if you're a non-landowner. It's a once-in-a-lifetime tag. And so it's a coveted tag, hard to get. But I have friends across the state that get them every year and kill some giant bulls.
No kidding. And then do you chase a lot of muleys in Nebraska usually, or is it, I mean, what's preferred there? Because there is muleys more western end of the state, but like.
Yeah. So we're in like the transition country essentially. So east end of Nebraska is all whitetails. As you head west, it transitions into mule deer. And where we hunt out in the panhandle, it's 90-95% mule deer. Then you'll get some whitetails down in the river bottoms. We have a CRP field that I saw a whitetail on last year that was, you know, 110-inch whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mainly mule deer out there, and Nebraska has, you know, mainly whitetails to the east and then mule deer to the west. And that's what's fun about the state, you know, is we can hunt a diversity and a diversity of tactics as well. So it's fun,
yeah.
And it makes you a well-rounded hunter as well.
So see, hearing that makes me wonder, like, I love Illinois. Like, I think Iowa, Illinois, debatable, like the king of whitetail states, right, in the country, mm-hmm. for the most part, right? There's big deer everywhere, really, nowadays. But it, like, hearing you say that makes me like, man, Nebraska would be cool. I always think, like, if I ever moved, like, South Dakota, you know, you get East River, West River, mm-hmm. you know, there's mule deer. There's,
I love South Dakota.
Yeah, amazing state. You know, I got some great friends that hunt up there. And, you know, you go to their trophy room and it's, like, divided, all big East River whitetails, like, just yep. how we kill in Illinois. And then the other side is all big West River muleys. And it's mm-hmm. like, man, that opens up the door for so much opportunity if you live there. And it kind of makes you a really well-rounded bow hunter, being able to stay in your state and drive a few hours and almost be in a different, completely area.
Absolutely. You know? A lot of those guys will spot and stalk and the next day sit in a tree stand all day. You know, yeah. it's amazing. A lot of those guys are really good hunters because they're hunting a diversity of methods. And yeah. It's neat. I love South Dakota. It's one of my favorite states. It's not my favorite deer hunting state.
Yeah, there's just so much, but that's a good point. You know, if you could almost split up your, like, if the hunting's slow, the movement's slow, you're like, all right, well, I'm going to spot and stalk for 4 days until something changes or mm-hmm. a cold front comes in or whatever. I'm going to go back to sitting in this funnel in my tree stand and then I'll go spot and stalk. Like, I'm jealous of that, really, when you think about it, because that keeps yeah. you fresh, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and there's a time and a place for all of it, right? Nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I love tree stand hunting, but sometimes it's nice to get out in the dirt and start walking and see what yeah. you see. And it's fun. All of it is.
Yeah. So you said you're going to Wyoming this year. What's game plan for Wyoming?
Yeah. So we're going to be hunting central Wyoming. I've been hunting eastern Wyoming, but I did not get a tag drawn this year. And then I was lucky enough to get a leftover tag. Mm-hmm. So we're going to a place I've never hunted before. And, you know, essentially we'll be hunting. There's this kind of like a river or creek bottom with some pivots around it. And so it'll be very open country. The hills around are just, you know, big dry hills essentially. And then mm-hmm. white tails down that go, you know, to the food down in the bottoms. And so it'll be a lot of ground blind hunting, I suspect. You know, we'll scout and try to set up on something the next night, essentially, is what we're going to do. So I've never been here before. So it'll be a learning experience as well.
That'll be cool to see you guys kind of figure that out, because you got to figure it out quicker, you know, be limited time. But when does season in Wyoming open?
So September 1. Our cow elk tag and antelope season starts in Nebraska actually next weekend. Cow elk's actually in now.
It's coming.
So
fast.
We're going out next weekend. Cody's got a bow antelope tag. I have a cow elk tag, and then we probably won't head out to Wyoming until probably the third, fourth, fifth, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Depending on what's going on. If we have a big deer showing up at home, we're going to hunt that deer at home. But if we mm-hmm. don't, we'll probably head out west, you know, that, you know, middle of the first week, second week.
Yeah.
And then bow hunt out there.
Man, that's crazy to think, like, the summer's gotten away from me. Like, season's opening for you guys next weekend. That you're going to be
next week. Gotta love it. And it's different, you know, when you're Illinois, Iowa, you're used to October.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I like is early season. I love early season. September 1st to the 15th is some of my favorite time.
See, and that I don't ever get to hunt whitetails that early. You know, I've never, you know, I'll be elk hunting in Wyoming about the same time you said you're going, mm-hmm. but I've always wanted to kill a velvet whitetail, and I could, you know, it's Nebraska's not that far. I'm sure I could go and figure that out, or go to one of these, like, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, where season opens early. I know there's an opportunity to kill velvet whitetails there, but that's got to be awesome. You're still catching these deer on almost a summer pattern at that point, right? Or it's probably just about to change there. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, we hunt eastern Nebraska. September 1 is basically when it changes, and you'll get a couple of smaller bucks that seem to hold velvet, maybe a big buck here or there. Most of the time, September 2nd, 3rd, velvet's gone. Mm-hmm. When you go to, like, Wyoming, it seems like they hold it for a week longer or so.
And yeah.
So you want to kill a velvet buck, I would tell you Wyoming's your best bet.
Really? What do you prefer? Do you prefer, because there's this debate with one of my buddies who's a big mule deer guy. He hates velvet. He hates it. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool because I don't ever have the opportunity. It's more foreign to me, I guess, or special. Mm-hmm. How are you? Because you kind of, you're on that line, right?
I like different, right? So yeah. I like, you know, velvet deer. I've shot two. And I will say this with the velvet is when you're dragging that deer, man, you have to be so careful. That's very easy to damage. And that would, to me, that's one of the disadvantages to hunting velvet deer is you really have to be concerned with the velvet. And so it's fun. You know, I like it all. Summer pattern hunting to me is a lot of fun. Scouting, I mean, you feel like you're hunting one particular deer most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so he comes out. There's a lot of build up and a lot of fun
to those hunts. What are you looking forward to the most coming in? You know, let's go September 15th and up till now. I mean, you guys have a lot kind of crammed in mm-hmm. in just a few weeks span here. How are you focused on one thing over the other? Are you just rolling with the motions? What's the game plan?
We roll with the motions. You know, we're going to hunt MRI. And if we have, you know, we have antelope showing up on a water hole, that's where we're going to go. If we have deer showing up at home, that's where we're going to go. If we don't, we'll head out west and try bow hunting, you know, in Wyoming. And so it just depends what we have going on.
And, it's good to have options, I guess, at that point, right?
Well, it's hard because, you know, you got to fit work in there. And so you got to fit family work, all of that thing, you know, those matter. And so we'll do it in 2-3 day stints. A lot of nights driving through the night just so we can make it happen.
Yeah.
But it's what we live for.
Well, I think that I'm glad you brought that up because that's something that a lot of guys will be like, you know, they watch you on jury, you know, and they're like, well, he's got all month off or whatever. And I feel like people who don't really look into it don't realize it's like, no, you're making sacrifices from work and family to get the time and you need to be successful. And I feel like a lot of guys will watch, you know, for lack of a better term, TV hunters. Mm-hmm. And I hate that because it's not what it is, I guess, but, and just think that all they're doing is hunting. And then when you work in the hunting industry, it's all just rainbows and butterflies and all you do is hunt. That's not true.
No, there'll be a lot of nights. So where I hunt, where I grew up hunting is a 2.5 to 3 hour drive from where I live. Mm-hmm. So like, especially November hits, if we got a good, you know, good set of mornings coming up, I'll leave my house at 1-2 in the morning. We'll hunt the morning till 10-11. I'll drive home, work from noon, 1 o'clock until 6-7. And I'll do the same thing 3 or 4 or 5 days consecutively just so I can bounce. I can be home at night with the kids. I can be at work. And Cody and I can be in the stand those mornings.
See, that's figuring a way to just get it done because there's a lot of people not willing to do those things that are so quick to judge you on making sacrifices and putting in a little bit of extra hours to make your hunting happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard on the body and it's mentally tough, but man, it's just what we live for. It's what I love to do. And so early season, it's funny, it's opposite because I'll work in the morning and then the evenings I'll head out, you know, noon, 1 o'clock, we'll go do an evening set. I'll drive back to work and do the same thing the next day, you know? And so it's a balance and it's tough. It's hard on the family. So that's part of it too. And you have kids and all the dads out there know what I'm talking about. So I really try to, and that's what I love about DeerCast so much is you hunt the days that matter. And so if there's a day that is marginal, I'm not going to hunt it. I'm going to spend time and be, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Purposeful in spending time at home and at work. And then those days that are great, we'll be out there.
That's a good point too, because I think, you know, a lot of people use DeerCast for that reason. And then it gets judged. I'm not going to let an app tell me when and when not to hunt. Well, it's like, it makes you feel better. And I feel like this weird guilt if I'm not hunting. And I feel that I should be, I'll have like this distraction in my brain of like, oh, I should be out there, but I'm at home, even though I'm having a good time with my kids and my family, you know, I kind of have that, like, oh, I should be capitalizing on this. And that buck's going to move by because I'm not there, where I feel like DeerCast will help me relax and just enjoy what I'm doing other than hunting that night. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
Did you struggle with that before?
You've always heard you can't kill them on the couch, right? And so you spend a lot of not pointless, but non-purposeful days hunting, especially in that November time frame.
Yeah.
You know, and if we don't have MRI and we don't have deer cast, weather, a front, anything, like, you know, there's no point in hunting. I mean, there is. It's a great time, but when you have work-life balance, you have to balance that. And those are the days that you just stay at home and be family-driven. And
I feel like what we're talking about, I don't know what you want to categorize it as, but that's like, in my opinion, the number one deer cast like selling point. Like, but, and I feel like you're going to get your hard ass guys that are going to be like, screw that. I'll see my family when I get done. Yeah. Or they just don't get it, you know? Right. But I feel like that gets overlooked. I did that like before I had kids. I hunted every time I could go hunting and was probably causing a little more harm than I was doing good for my hunting, especially when it counted, you know, that first good cold front in October. I already burned out a spot because I'm just thought the more I'm out there, the better. Not always the case.
Absolutely. You know, technology, and you can look at it very many ways, you know, but it really helps you stay off your property, and you don't realize it, but when you're off of that property, that big buck's going to show up more. And that's probably the one thing I've learned the most over the last 4 or 5 years, especially from the Team Drury guys, is those lessons that they learn. You know, I used to be the same way. I'd hunt every chance I got. And what you don't realize is, you know, that big buck's going to go nocturnal. And if you can, you know, watch your axis. Everyone says, oh, axis is everything. And at first I didn't quite grasp the concept. They literally mean bulletproof axis. You can get in and get out with basically nothing seeing you, hearing you, smelling you. And you keep that pressure off. It's like right now, I've never had on the place I own where I grew up. It's 77 acres and it's not an early season spot. Typically once crops get in, they start coming in at big wooded bottoms and I have a food plot. Well, for the first year, maybe 10 years, I have an early season buck showing up.
Oh, really?
The kid's named him Moose. And, you know, so I might get a chance to hunt him, but most of the time they're not there. And, we're really focusing more November hunts at that particular
spot. So that's interesting because, so I purchased my wife and I purchased our first farm, a 40 acre piece. And it's one of those spots. I would explain it exactly like you just explained your spot. Like, we've only owned it for a few months now, but it's one of those spots. I'm just expecting it to be a late October, November rut spot. The north end of it borders this little river. It's more of a creek than it is a river. They call it a river. And I'm expecting deer to just run that. And there's deer in there now. You know, I got a couple good bucks on there, but not like they're not living there. You can tell. But I do have deer living there. But I feel like a big buck spot late October, November. So I might have to get on the horn with you and kind of see. I don't know if yours is like river bottom type ground or not.
It's just a small spring creek bottom. There's not a lot of food around. But, you know, we plant knowing that it's probably going to be more of a October, November spot than early season spot. Even late season, it could be good. But at the same time, you know, the big bucks are there during the rut.
Yeah.
So plant to that, right? Don't try to force a rut property into an early season property or late season property. You know, make it the best of what it is.
Yeah, make it optimized for how the deer are going to use it pretty much.
Absolutely. And I got a chance at this buck. He's been showing up. I mean, probably in upper 40s, 5.5-year-old deer, we think.
Yeah.
Nice buck.
Perfect buck to shoot, really.
Yeah, we got a chance at him. We'll see what happens here in the next few weeks. But he's been around for the last month or so.
So his name's Moose.
Moose, my oldest son named him. That's like, awesome. He looks like a moose. I'm like, that's his name.
Yeah, perfect.
So
the story of Moose, we'll follow up and see if you can get an arrow in him. That's cool. That's a farm you grew up hunting?
Yeah. So it was my stepdad's growing up and he's starting to retire a little bit and asked if I wanted to buy any ground. And so it's actually the second piece I'd ever purchased. I had a piece that I purchased out west that it's actually probably a better hunting piece, but this particular piece has a lot of sentimental value. And actually, Kyle Lamore's hunted on, like turkey hunted with me. He calls it Sentimental Farms because he every time he hunts there, he gets he feels he gets garholed. It's the end of turkey hunting. But, you know, we killed turkeys on it this year. I killed a 150-inch 5x5 off of it last year. And so,
awesome.
Yeah. So, and that was actually the one on the water hole. And so it's really neat.
Yeah. I'm about to get, I'm going to do that. I have one big plot that there's like a creek. There is a creek on one of the farms that I hunt, but now I just want to see if I can just put a cattle trough out there and fill it full and shoot a deer off a cattle trough.
It can't hurt you. You know, especially a lot of people pinch their plots, you know, 30 yards. But at the end of that pinch, put a water tank.
Well, what's you know what's funny about that? There is an old, where my food plot is this year, the previous owners, they used to camp in the spot, and it just happens to be in a good spot. They had this old, they got a bunch of like big cobblestone rocks. So I have one circle in the middle of the plot where I might just get a tank that fits in the middle of that and fill it full because it's already bored out. It'll look all fancy. So maybe that's what I'll do. I
feel like you're in Ireland driving. You see all the big stone walls, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just a fire pit, you know, in a circle, but I can see it now. You know, I'm going to actually film a hunt for once, and then this big buck will be drinking out of this cattle trough, and I'll shoot it, and everyone will say I'm a high fence hunter, and then I'll laugh. Yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah.
You'll get those comments, and that's all right. I had some person said that that's baiting when I shot that deer over the
water. On water? That's baiting. Nice, that's thanks.
Right. I mean, everyone has their opinion. That's great, you know, if he's a diehard, you know, tree stand hunter hunting over acorns, I mean, everyone's got their opinion. It's all right.
You know how many deer I have killed out of cut cornfields? What's the difference?
Right.
Oh, that's great. Man, like, do you guys get a lot of that? Do you see that being with Drury and stuff like that? And you guys are obviously knowledgeable and successful hunters. Do you run into a lot of negative comments and stuff?
You know, we don't, because we're a little under the radar. You know, we don't have 20,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, you're not under the radar, though, man. You're on Drury Outdoors.
A little bit, you know, a few negative comments here and there, but not nearly like some of the people do. I mean,
yeah,
especially some of the gals on the team, man. They get, it's ruthless.
I talked with Taylor and Mark about that, too, and I don't always like to bring that up, but I'm trying to transition from being bothered about it to finding it comical. Do you know what I mean?
I don't get it. Why can't people just be happy? I mean, if you're successful, that's awesome. It's ego driven, and you know, it's even within the state, guys. You know, it's not a competition. It really isn't.
It's you and the deer, or whatever you're hunting. That's all what it is. Yeah.
Like success and, you know, size of deer and all that. You know, I'm a guy. I love to hunt, and so Cody has to call me off half the deer that walk by because I, you know, and he'll tell you it's so fun. He's like, no, Brian. Like, ah, you know, because I just like being out there.
You sound just like me to a point. Like, I like to kill big deer also, you know, if I can. But I just like to shoot, and I think it's fun. Like, I sat with Doug when we were in Africa, and everything that walked by, I filmed him one morning. I'm like, hey, you should shoot this. He's like, dude. So he gets back to camp. He's like, don't bring Kurt with you if he's filming, because he'll try to talk you into shooting anything that comes in. I'm like, it's fun. I don't know. Sorry. Yeah. So
I've gotten better over the years, but I'm telling you, size of the animal doesn't matter too much to me. If it gets my heart pounding, that's what matters.
Yeah. You and I would be a dangerous duo if we were a hunter cameraman, because we'd just be tipping shit over left and right.
We wouldn't have any shortage of venison. That's for sure.
Right. We'd have a lot of footage for Mark and Terry and the guys, but they'd be like, man, you guys got to hold out a little bit.
They call you up like, hey, what'd you shoot that deer for?
It got me excited. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. I'm the same way. You need a partner like that can be like, hey man, maybe don't, but I know you like
Cody's great.
Yeah. We gotta get him.
He's great. You know, he really pays attention, and he'll want it like in his hunts, you know, he's always after a certain deer or two, and he's very cautious what he shoots. Mm-hmm. I think he likes the encounters more than killing something, if that makes sense.
And yeah.
So that man, he's a machine, a great hunter, but he's good for me.
Yeah. Because
half the time we're together, he's like, all right, Brian, no.
Yeah. That's it's like he sounds like Austin Chandler to me, my buddy. You know, Austin's very selective. I'm selective. I don't want to paint it that I'm not. I am, but and I know you are as well. But I think we're talking about our inner monologue when we see something come in, and it's like, ooh, you start licking your lips a little bit. You're like, shoot some arrows.
Yeah, have some fun. I mean, that's what we're out there for.
I'm not there to watch a deer, I guess, at the end of the day.
I have no shame in shooting a three-year-old. I mean, I don't.
That's awesome. I kind of got to the point where I've killed a good pile of three-year-olds, and then now I'm like, okay, we need to level up here and get a bunch more deer in that 5.5-year-old 160 class and up, and I'm doing my best, but man, you catch me on the wrong day. A good 125 runs by me fast enough and I get excited.
Yeah.
He catches one of the lungs sometimes. I'm trying to make those fewer and far between.
When you're managing your own ground, it's different too. I've really tried to be more selective, and that's kind of one of the things I'm trying to do personally, is just be, you know, wait for that next age class and be picky. And it really helps if you have pictures. You know, if there's a no-name buck or an unknown buck coming through, it's a lot harder than if it's a buck you've had experience with. And I had that last year, a buck I named Lefty. I thought he was three, real nice, probably 130-inch 4x4 heavy. When I first saw him, I thought he was the shooter, and then realized who it was. And he gave me 3 or 4 opportunities throughout the season, and never shot him once. Mm-hmm. And he actually got shot during rifle season and died a couple months later, had real bad injuries and stuff. But but anyway, he could have been my shooter this year.
Yeah. Well, do you feel with your own piece that you can manage? And this is kind of my perception. I've never had ground that I was like, I'm going to have this a really long time, because it was always like a permission piece or, hey, you can hunt here for a couple seasons. And then it always felt so temporary to me. So I felt like any deer that was good, I had to take advantage of it, versus like letting that three-year-old go to kill him 4 or 5-year-old when he could put on another 40 inches. That's how I felt.
The guys who hunt, so our deer roam a lot. I know a lot of, books you read, they say deer's home range 400 acres. I swear it's 1.5 miles where I hunt. Mm-hmm. And so I'm friends with a lot of the guys who hunt around, and we will share pictures. And, those guys are going to shoot what they feel like it. At the same time, they're all trophy hunters as well. And so the deer I shot this year, 2 neighbors over was also hunting him as well, and had him often. And I'm telling you, it's 3/4 of a mile away. And, it was transition zone on my property. He'd show up for 2-3 days, then be gone. He'd show up for 2-3 days, be gone 2 weeks or whatever. And so I bet you it was on his property more than it was on mine. After I shot him, he said, oh, hey, we were hunting that buck, this and that, he was happy for me. And same, the deer he shot, I had on my property. I was happy for him. And that's, to me, that's what neighbors should be.
100%. 100%. Do you have the relationship? Are you showing trail cam pictures of deer, or is it the end of the season, then the pictures kind of come out?
No, we do. It's fun. I haven't showed anybody pictures yet because no one's asked, but honestly, last year we were sharing back and forth. These couple guys I trust, they're not going to come on mine. I'm not going to come on them. They're hunting fence lines, right? So, they're going to follow the law, and I'm going to do the same. And they're getting pictures of the same deer I am. So.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? There's like, I don't know, I'm a little more open with sharing trail cam pictures now with people that I respect and trust, right? You have to, because there's a lot of people that'll try to screw you over. Trail cam pictures can ruin a lot of things, from relationships to whatever else negative it can lead into. We don't even need to talk about it. But now I think it's better to share trail cam pictures with people you trust that might hunt in the same area, because they can be like, okay, I know there's an opportunity if they don't already have pictures of it. Okay, there's big deer in the area. November 5th, November 1st, the buck that stayed there could end up a mile that way and he could kill it. So maybe that'll keep them from passing or from shooting younger deer, knowing the opportunity for more mature deer is there. So that mindset hopefully would increase quality and mindset and everything for the area that you're in. So That, I think that's and how it could benefit.
We rarely get deer over 150. And so, you know, if I had a 170 inch or something or bigger out there, I would be a lot more guarded. Yeah. But like the deer I'm hunting right now, he'll be right close to 150, you know. And mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I hope one of the other neighbors shoot him. I mean, he's a mature deer. If I don't get him, I hope they do, you know. So.
Perfect deer to shoot at that point. I mean, it's yeah. interesting stuff. I mean, we could slice that one down a lot of different ways.
Oh yeah. There are a lot of opinions out there and they're all right. You know, it's you know,
yeah.
be you, right?
For sure. Well, man, you got a lot to look forward to. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I think a lot to follow up on with you guys, with you and Cody, and see where everything goes. What we need to do, season's going to be tough, but after you guys, once we get through into October, try to get you guys this way and have you guys both in studio for a couple of episodes.
I won't be far from you sometime in the near future, but
yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun.
It makes me want, since I'm going to be in Wyoming, I might just bring recording equipment with me. And then when I drive back through, I might just try and give you a holler.
Absolutely. As long
as I'm happy and my hunt goes well and I'm feeling all chipper, you know?
Yeah, heck yeah. I mean, that you'll be driving right by us when you're coming back. So
yeah,
that sounds like a fun hunt.
Maybe we could do that. Maybe we'll figure something out on my drive back, and hopefully we all have animals down at that point and just a ton of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. We might be killing time, but no matter what, we're going to have fun.
Well, you're going to be a tired man from work and family time and hunting and driving and all that. So I'm glad we did talk about that, though. I think that's important that people need to realize to do the things that you guys are trying to do and maintain a work-life family balance. That's your option. That's the only thing you can do if you want to.
Right. Especially as a dad, and you understand it too. I mean, you want to be there. And it's hard. It's hard. You know, it's hard on my wife when I'm gone. And so it's my job to be around as much as humanly possible.
Yeah. At
the same time, as soon as kids are asleep and man is asleep, I'll get on the road, you know.
Yeah. And
Cody and I'll, you know, we'll do what we can.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. You know, it's like I kind of look at it that way too. Like the morning hunts, once it's getting good, it's like kids are going to get up and go straight to daycare or whatever anyway. And then I can get my morning hunts in when the morning hunts are good. And then you feel a little bad in the afternoon until the time changes. You know, once the time changes, you're like, oh, I'm home for dinner and all night. Right. So it gets a little easier. Absolutely. But what did we not cover? We covered a lot kind of quickly, but also in detail. It's a fun episode. And this is going to lead us into more follow-up episodes, you know. But
you know, the biggest thing is just have fun no matter what you're doing. Be willing to try different things. Water holes have been very good for Cody and I over the last couple of years. So this year it's a big focal point of ours. We've had a major drought in Nebraska, more so than 2012, believe that. And mm-hmm. so we haven't found EHD yet.
Hope you
at the same
don't.
Time, it very well could be there and we're just missing it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, those water holes are going to be key. And we actually did just catch a rain on Monday, inch and a half. Planted food plots on Saturday, so I mean that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
So we might have some food too this year that we didn't have last year.
Good. Well, I like the water and hold tips. I think that's awesome. I think you're already prepared for Africa, and I'm gonna keep you in the loop on the next trip. I have to go back. It's you'll love it. I think you'll feel right at home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, be willing to try different things. You know, if you're a tree stand guy, be willing to try the ground blind. If you're a ground blind guy, be willing to try spot and stalk. You know, just going to make you a better hunter if you're, you know, if you try different things and have fun while you're doing it.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to be more well-rounded and do things out of your comfort zone. I mean, I feel like once you get outside your comfort zone in a hunting tactic, I feel like you absorb it a little differently. Like first time antelope hunting in South Dakota, it's like I've never done anything like that.
Right.
So there's so much. I mean, there's really not a ton of terrain features. In certain spots there is. So you pick the tallest piece of grass and use that as your
or a fence post.
Or a fence
post. It's the weirdest thing ever. Yeah, and it works.
Yeah, you can. It's funny how you kind of like, if you look at it from a distance, you're like, that's never gonna work, and then you get into it, and then you're like, oh yeah, this I'm gonna make this work. Think skinny. It's kind of funny.
You know, and that's a good point. When in doubt, be aggressive. One of me and Cody's mantras when we're hunting, and if you need to get an extra 30 yards and the deer are looking at you or can see you, just go slow and do it, you know.
Yeah.
If that's what it's going to take to potentially get a shot. You know, that's what we did last year in Wyoming. The deer could see us in plain sight. And we had like a 2D doe decoy, and you got Cody and I, you know, an inch of an hour, it seems, just to be able to get a shot. So you got to do it. And it ended up being successful.
See, that's even better. See, when you do stuff out of kind of your normal comfort zone and you pull it off, it's even better of a feeling, you know? So
my rifle turned into a single shot. I lost my clip somewhere in there. Get there, I'm like, oh man, I'm digging through my bag to put a shell in the chamber. You
know? That's awesome.
It was a memorable hunt. We had a lot of laughs after that one.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to see what happens here in the next. I mean, gosh dang, you said the next 3 weeks. It's scary. Like, I leave for my elk hunt in 2.5 weeks. It's a problem. We're prepared, right? I'm more prepared than I think I am, especially shooting my bow the way I did the last few weeks, but it just sneaks up on you and you're juggling life and I get anxious. I'm like, oh, there's so much to do. And there's a lot to do. So
that first hunt of the year is a big deal. You got an animal and the bow in hand. I mean, you have an advantage having shot your bow at an animal, but every year it seems like you should go out and shoot a doe right away just to get the jitters out, get the confidence up, you know.
That's how I feel.
You seem to move a lot too. And so if you can, you know, that first hunt, just be dialed in, ready to go. It's tough.
For sure.
It's a mental game.
It is too. I break the ice on a doe. I try to, but I'm the same way. And plus I'm sentimental a little bit, not sentimental, superstitious, maybe more is the term, where I get a new bow and I'm like, I have to make sure it's capable. Like, I had to break it in. But we already did that in Africa, so maybe I'll be a little more calm when I go on the elk hunt and go on my first white. We'll see. Well, cool, man. This was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it again.
I'm shooting the new Matthews this year, and so I haven't broke that one in on an animal. It might be a cow elk.
Well, that'd be perfect. That'd be a great way to start it off.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, cool. I'm hoping I have a big bull elk to run by you when I drive through Nebraska on the way home. So we'll keep in touch, man. Best of luck to you. I feel like we should keep talking for another 2 hours. This episode
flew by.
Well, easy. But we'll get you guys in the studio, or I'll talk to you at your guys' home base on the way home, and we'll make it happen. So
let's do it.
Where can people find you?
So Instagram, Brian Weiss_DruryOutdoors, Facebook page, just Critical Mass on the Outdoor Channel, Tuesday nights, 9:30 Central.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening, watching, supporting us here on DeerCast. We appreciate it all. And I think people want Mark Drury to host all of our podcasts now after last week's episode. So thanks for the feedback on that, guys. And you know what to do. Go shoot a giant. Appreciate you guys.